my mother would have believed every word. It's a great chus to have been invited to come back to speak to all of you in this wonderful, wonderful kehillah. I can tell you that, Baruch Hashem, I do have the opportunity to travel many, many different places. As a matter of fact, this Tuesday I'm going to Australia. And it's just very interesting, when you go to Australia during Sfira, you really got a problem, because you miss a day someplace. So I was on the phone with Rab David Heber from Baltimore, who happens to be my son-in-law's mechutin. He's a genius as far as zmanim. And it turns out that between Los Angeles and Melbourne, I've got 3 hours of time when it's halachically Wednesday. I'm not supposed to daven shacharis, but I can count sfira without a bracha. Believe me, I don't have it straight yet. But but it is remarkable to me, of all the places that I go to, there are very few people who have the enthusiasm Phil Rosen has. And I think he deserves a great round of applause for everything that he does. And he does everything almost perfect. When I mean almost perfect, my name is Pesach, but there's only 3 kaises here, not 4. You almost got it. But he's really wonderful, and it's very, very special. It's special to have been introduced by Rabbi Lubin. As I was mentioning before, our fathers, Baruch Hashem, many, many years ago, when Rabbi Lubin's father was the Rav in the Young Israel of Forest Hills, my father was a Moel in Kew Gardens, and they shared many, many, many wonderful simchas together. So I feel a connection with many of you here, the Eisners and all the other people. I don't know if Matt is here, Matt Holland and his wife Shelley, but they are literally like family to me. So I hope that we'll be able to be inspired together. Many years ago, the second Ger Rebbe, the Sfas Emes, when he was Nifter, he died, he was 58 years old. And at his Levaya, at his funeral, his son, the Imre Emes, said to his own brother, Rabbi Tzalo, he said, at least our father had Arichas Yamim. Arichas Yamim technically means longevity, length of days. So Rabbi Tzalo said, what are you talking about? That's considered longevity, Arichas Yamim. He only lived to be 58. So he said, so cleverly, he said, I didn't say that our father had Arichas Shonim, length of years. I said that our father had Arichas Yamim, length of days. And there's a great difference between Arichas Shonim, length of years, and length of days. No one, no tzaddik, no doctor, no one can guarantee anyone Arichas Shonim, length of years. Nobody knows what tomorrow brings. Nobody knows how old they will be. We all know terrible, terrible things can happen suddenly. But every single one of us can guarantee in our lives that we'll have Arichas Yamim, that we'll have length of days. That means to make the most out of every day. And that's what the Imre Emes was saying about his father, the Sfas Emes. He made the most out of every day. He lived every day the full 24 hours and fulfilled what a person is supposed to accomplish in 24 hours every day. And that's what we've come to talk about tonight. Not only counting our days in the days of Sfira, but making every day count. And that's all that Hashem wants from us, that we fulfill our potential and make every day count. Every day is a blessing, every day is an opportunity, and if we can learn tonight how to make every day count, how to live our lives so that every day is fulfilling, then we will have accomplished what we're supposed to accomplish in this world. I always wondered why we don't make a Shechiyonu when we start counting Sfira. After all, there are many mitzvahs that we do periodically over the year, whether eating matzah, blowing shofar, reading the Megillah, and always you say a Shechiyonu. You say a Shechiyonu, you're grateful that you lived to this day, that you'll be able to fulfill this special mitzvah. Why not by Sfira? So there are two interesting answers, really the opposite end of the spectrum. The first answer is from the Ran in Pesachim. The Ran was one of the Rishonim, And this is literally the last comment that he has on Masechet Pesachim. If you open up the Gemara backwards and you look at the last commentary, that's where you'll find it. And he says something very interesting. Shelo matzinu birchazman. We do not find that you say Shachianu ela bedavar sheyesh b'shum hana. Only something that brings you happiness and pleasure. Who doesn't love eating matzah the night of the Seder? Who doesn't love lighting Hanukkah candles or sitting in the sukkah? It's such a pleasurable thing. However, he says when a person says the bracha, Asher kiddushonu b'mitzvos v'tzivonu al sfiras ha'omer, if you think of the meaning of the words, we're counting the fact that we're now able to bring the carbon omer, but we can't. We don't have the Beis HaMikdash. And that brings a tinge of sadness. We're commemorating that once upon a time we were able to bring the Karban Omer. But when somebody really thinks about it, it's sad that we don't have the Beis HaMikdash. That's why we don't say Shechianu. Now when I saw this teretz in the Ran, something suddenly made a lot of sense to me that I never thought about before. What are the first words that we say after we bench the Omer? We say Hayyim, whatever it is, the night of Sfiras HaOmer. And what is the Harachamon? Harachamon, who yachzulonu avoidas Beis HaMikdash l'mkayma, right? We say Hashem, help us that we should get the service of the Beis HaMikdash. Why all of a sudden are we saying that? I believe because of the Ran. Because the Ran is telling us that there is a tinge of sadness because we don't have the Beis HaMikdash. Rachmon Yasalon Savaris Beis HaMikdash, right? So that's why we say Hashem, we ask that you should bring back the Beis HaMikdash. Because that's what triggers that thought. But the Bnei Yisoscha says a different reason. The Bnei Yisoscha says, Ki ein hachuka al hayomim hanisforim. Our desire is not really the counting of the days. That's not the main focus of the mitzvah. Rak al hayayim sha'acha yimei hasfira. We're trying to climb a mountain. That's why we don't count 49 down to 1. If I told you that you just won a $4 million lottery and you were going to get in 3 months, you would count, 90 days, 89 days, 70 days, 60 days, till you get it. That's how you would count if you were excited about something. But the Ran says, no, we're working our way up 1 to 49 till Shavuos. And then, Oz Mavarcha Shechiyonu, Vigiyonu, why? Ki kol yemei hasfira mitzapim l'yayim hanichpad. We're working our way up 49 levels to get higher. Then we make Shechiyonu. So really, Sfira is only the beginning. And that's what the beauty of ACT is all about. ACT is an organization that is trying to make us grow through different methods, through different midos, through different aspects of learning and tefillah, and we're growing. And now this is the time to grow from Pesach till Shavuos. And if that's the case, that's why we don't say Shechiyonu according to Bnei Yisoscha, because we're waiting until we've reached that level and then we can say Shechiyonu. So if that's the case, it's very interesting. Why 49? Where did 49 come from? Why not 59? Why not 39? Where does 49 come in? And again, the Bnei Yisoscha tells us something fabulous. And the reason that I love this is because this is a Mishnah that you and I could have learned 100 times and we would never think to put it together with why it's 49 days. Listen to this. The Mishnah in Ovos, Perik Bey's Mishnah test tells us, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was sitting with his Talmidim, and he said to them, tell me, Eizehu derech yeshara sheyidbak bo ha'adam. What is the midah, or the righteous path, sheyidbak, let's remember that word, sheyidbak, that you should attach yourself to. What is the best midah that a yid could have? Rabbi Lezer said, Rebbe, I believe we should all have an ayin toiv. Have a good eye. Don't be jealous of others. Somebody has more money than you, be happy for them. Somebody has more nachas, be happy. They have a beautiful home, be happy. Have an ayin toiv. That's what Rabbi Lezer said. Rabbi Yeshua said, I believe everybody should be a chover toiv, a good friend. Many of us have many acquaintances, but how many have such good, loyal friends? That's what's important. And different people said different things. Finally, Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch said, Rebbe, you know what I believe? I believe the answer is everybody should have a lev tov, a good heart. When Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai heard that, he said, you know something? He's right. Because if you have a good heart, you're going to be a good friend, you'll have an ayin tov, you'll be a good neighbor. Fine, very nice Mishnah. Lev tov, everybody should have a good heart. Zok tehelek ebnei yisoschar. How much does lev tov equal? Lev is equal how much? 32. Tov is equal 17. 32 and 17 is 49. That's why we have 49 days. Because in this period of time, between Pesach and Shavuos, we are supposed to get for ourselves a lev tov, a good heart. And isn't it interesting? After lev, what happens after the 32nd day? It's Lag BaOmer. That's the time of tov. That's the good times already. You can shave, you can go to weddings. It's a little bit different. So it's interesting, even the word lev, the words lev tov divide the sphera in a beautiful way. The first 32 days, and then the last 17 days. But now you're going to hear something that mamish, you have to fasten your seatbelts. This is the greatest vort that I ever heard on the Haggadah, and it fits in so perfect with everything that we're talking tonight. Now, I don't know if any of you ever heard of Rav Isaac Bernstein. Rav Isaac Bernstein was born in Ireland and lived in England and was blessed with the greatest Irish-English accent that you could imagine. And he was a great Rav. And if you could get a hold of his CDs, when I was listening, of course, they were all on audio cassettes. I'm sure that they're on CDs today. He was a Rav in England. Nebuch, he passed away in his 50s. But he was so enthusiastic, and every Dvar Torah that he said, you could just see him like flying. It's just incredible. But this vort, when he said this thing, I thought I would fly out of the car, literally. Watch this, you won't believe it. The question is, he asks, he brings a Rabbeinu Menoyach, and Rabbeinu Menoyach tells us something absolutely fascinating. He says, what is the reason that we dip the karpas in salt water? What is the reason that we dip the karpas? Now, if you and I thought about it for 50 years, we'd never come up with it. He says, you know why? Because the brothers dipped the ksenes pasim, the coat. Remember, they dipped it in blood to fool Yaakov? And Yaakov then thought that Yosef was killed, and that was the beginning of the Golas. Now, brothers couldn't get along. So the Baal HaGadah wants to tell us, wait a second, tonight you're going to talk about how you got out of Mitzrayim. Wait a second, before Halachma, before Yachad, for anything, take the karpas, dip the karpas. And dip the karpas, why? Because I want to tell you how you got into Mitzrayim. Then you'll be able to know how you're going to get out. You know how you got in? Because brothers couldn't get along. And now, I don't know how many of you have a chumash in front of you, but if you have a chumash, it's worth it to take it out, because I'm going to show you something that Rabbi Bernstein showed that you would not believe until you see it inside. Those of you who have a chumash, take a look in Parshas Vayeshev, Bereshis, Lamed Zayin, Gimel. There's a Rashi there that is not to be believed. Bereshis Lamed Zayin Pasuk Gimel, and it tells us like this: V'Yisrael Ohav Es Yosef. Yisrael loved Yosef Mikol Banov, from all his children. We all know Yosef was his favorite, and he made him a Ksenes Pasin. Does anybody here have the Rashi already? If you take a look at Ksenes Pasin, take a look what Rashi says on the word Pasin. You won't believe it. Does anybody find the Rashi yet? The boy in the green sweater right there. You find it? Karpas. You see that? Isn't that amazing? Rashi says on the word pasim, ksenes pasim, he says karpas. What is karpas? Karpas is a combination of two words. Kar is a soft, fluffy pillow, and pas is wool. That's what the coat was. A soft, woolen, fluffy coat. Oh, the Ksenes Pasim is Karpas. That's what Rashi's telling us. So who cares whether it's potatoes or celery or Roman lettuce? The main thing, it's Karpas. Karpas is the Ksenes Pasim. And the brothers couldn't get along. That's how we started the Golos. And that's why we have to work 49 days to wear. What happens at Har Sinai? The Pasuk tells us, Vayichan Sham Yisrael. Klal Yisrael rested there. It should have said Vayachanu. There were a million people there. It should have said Vayachanu. They rested. No, Vayichan Ki Ishechod B'Lev Echod. That's what the Lev Tov is all about. It starts at the Seder with Karpas, showing us why the Gola started, because we couldn't get along with each other. And it works all the way through the Golos of Mitzrayim, through the redemption of Mitzrayim, till Har Sinai, till we're one. Oh, once we're one, that's the Geula. And that's what we're coming to learn tonight. How we can learn to become a unit once again. How we can learn in the 49 days to be that Lev Echad. To be that one, that Lev Tov rather. That Lev Tov, and Vayichan Sham Yisrael Ki Ish Echad V'Lev Echad. So let me share with you certain stories of Achdus. You know why? Because the Chofetz Chaim tells us something amazing. Avas Chesed Perik Yud Beis. Uma'oid tzorech lizoher shelo yechzal oimidas hacheser afilo yoim echad mimeichayov. From today on, if you can still do something tonight for somebody else, not one day should pass without your doing a favor for somebody else. That's how you're going to make your days count. If you can go to sleep every night knowing I did something for somebody else, then you know that that day has not been wasted. Now, I'm not talking husband for wife or wife for husband. That you got to do if you know it's good for you. I'm talking, I'm not talking, you know, fathers to sons, sons to parents, that automatically, that you've got to do. But I'm talking, think about other people. Think about outside the house. People always say, oh, charity begins at home. Of course charity begins at home, but that's not how you're going to train yourself. You want to be about chesed? Think about that woman in the nursing home. When was the last time you called her? What about your aunt who's in Almana living alone? When was the last time you called her? Before Purim? Or what about the person down the block who needs food for Shabbos, a Tomchit Shabbos? Were you involved in a Tomchit Shabbos? Did you invite somebody that was not religious over Yontif? These are things that we have to begin thinking about. We have to do a chesed for another person. You know what you can do over a telephone? You know what you can do with an email to give chizuk to somebody who's down? There's so many things that we can do. But if you keep a notebook and every day you don't go to sleep until you write down something that you did for somebody else, I guarantee you, in 2 months you'll be a different person. Hashem Tzilcha, God is your shadow. If you do for others, others will do for you. And I want to give you some examples. There's a camp in the mountains, it's called Camp Romamu. I know the camp very well because my son-in-law Shlomo David Pfeiffer is one of the division heads, and this year he was involved in the learning program. And he and a fellow Avi Dell, they had a learning program for the boys in the camp. There must be about 400 kids in the camp, Kanai Nora. Now anybody who has had anything to do with a boys' camp knows that Shabbos is the toughest day of all. Especially Shabbos around Shalosh Shudas, the camp, every boys' camp is falling apart. Why? Because the kids are antsy. They haven't been able to play ball, they haven't been able to go swimming. You know, so what are you going to do with boys on Shabbos, right? So they decided they're going to make a learning program where kids will get a raffle for every half hour they learn, and they're going to give them a very special prize. So at the beginning of the summer, the camp session is divided into two halves. They said, you know what, at the end of the first half of the summer, we're going to give out tremendous prizes. Every boy that learns a half hour on Shabbos, he's going to get a raffle. Matzah Shabbos will give you the raffles. And at the end of the first half, here were the two prizes. Now, you have to remember what you loved to do when you were in camp, you know, as a teenage boy. You could ride the head counselor's go-kart throughout the camp, right? You know, you could be on that golf cart and you could ride it. Of course, an adult would have to be there, but you could have it for an hour. Fine, that was one prize. Another prize was that they could go horseback riding. Now this year in Camp Rome, there were 7 boys from Antwerp, from Belgium. They had never been to an American camp before, and most of them probably had never gone horseback riding before. And there was one kid who, when he heard the announcement that they could get horseback riding, he literally jumped up and said, "I want to win." Everybody started laughing. I mean, there's 400 kids. What do you mean you want to win? Okay, fine. So every Shabbos, all the boys were learning, and this kid was learning also. And they all learned more than 1 hour and 2 hours. And they won, you know, for 2 hours they got 4 raffles, and 3 hours they got 6 raffles. And it was fine. And it was going on the whole first half of the summer. A couple nights before the end of the first half, Rabbi Shlomo Pfeiffer, who's a cousin to my son-in-law, who owns the camp, he picks out the winning raffle, and you would not believe it. This kid from Belgium, he wins. And nobody can believe it. Like, is this fixed? Everybody knew that he wanted to win, and Taka, he wins. The last night of that session, of the first half of camp, Rabbi Pfeiffer, the owner of the camp, got up and said like this. It was a banquet. They always have a banquet at the end. He said, "I want to tell all you boys how proud I am of all of you, that you spent so much time learning on Shabbos. And to me, that's the most important thing, that the boys were so serious about their learning." He says, "But I want to tell you another secret that I didn't find out," he says, "until after the raffle. Because I also wondered, how in the world could it be that this kid would win? And we all knew that he wanted to win." So he said the most amazing thing. The kids in his bunk were 10 years old, 5th graders, 10, 11 years old. Every one of them learned a few hours on Shabbos. And Mutter Shabbos, when they all got their raffles, whether they got 8, 9, or 10, they put his name on it. So by the time the raffle was drawn, this kid had 160 raffles with his name on it. So of course he won. That's a chesed. To me, the biggest shock of the whole thing is that these kids could keep a secret for 3 weeks. That they could all do this together in cahoots and not tell the kid in the bunk. It's amazing. And nobody else in the camp knew except those kids in the bunk. But that's a chesed. Because when you know it means so much to this child who's going back to Antwerp and probably never, I don't know, I was in Antwerp, I never saw horses there. But whatever, you know, I don't go horseback riding. But the idea is they knew that it meant something to this boy. And those kids did something special. That's chesed. That unified the bunk, and I'm sure in a sense it unified the camp once everybody understood what happened. But now I want to tell you something else. One of the most amazing things. Many of you certainly know the name of Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman was from the Gedolei Hador. He led the generation together with the Chafetz Chaim and Rabbi Chaim Reuser. And eventually, unfortunately, he was kidnapped and he lost his life. He was killed. It happened to be that a number of years ago, I went to Lithuania with a whole group of people, and we were in the house where he was kidnapped from, in Kovna, actually in Slobodka. And we were in that house and in the backyard where he gave his final shiur before he was taken. But he had a son. His name was Rab Simcha Wasserman, who was the most wonderful, kind, caring individual. A beautiful, wonderful person. He opened the yeshiva in Los Angeles when he came after the war to America. But it never really had the atzlocha that he thought it would have. And tragically, him and his wife, Rebbetzin Fegi, they had a fabulous marriage, but tragically they had no children. And eventually, the way I got to know him well was he came to Queens. There was a family, Dove Rowe, Mr. and Mrs. Rowe, and they were involved in Atzalah, and Rav Simcha had not been well, and they took care of him, and he stayed in their home, and I would go visit him, and I became very, very friendly with him. And he once told me, Rav Simcha once told me, because he never saw him without a smile. He said ever since he realized what the word Simcha meant, he decided no matter what life delivers on his palate, he will always be with happiness. And he really was. And eventually he moved to Eretz Yisrael, and he moved to Mattersdorf, those of you who know Yerushalayim, and he became very friendly with a very famous Aguda personality, a man by the name of Rav Shlomo Lawrence. Rav Shlomo Lawrence was a Chaver HaKnesset for Agudas Yisrael, and now in his older years, he became a chavrusa with Rav Chodesh. They lived a few houses from each other. Not Rav Chodesh, Rav Wasserman. The reason that I mention Rav Chodesh is because Rav Simcha Wasserman, together with Rav Moshe Chodesh, they built a yeshiva, which is called today Or HaChanan. And so Rav Chodesh was very friendly with Rav Wasserman, and Rav Wasserman would learn with Rav Shlomo Lawrence every night. I remember I came to visit Rav Simcha once, and he's sitting there learning with Rav Shlomo Lawrence. When Rav Simcha Wasserman passed away, he passed away Beis Cheshvan, Beis Mar Cheshvan. When he passed away, he was buried in Har HaMenuchos. Har HaMenuchos is that big cemetery for many, many tzaddikim. Rav Elvel Brisker is buried there. Rav Moshe Feinstein is buried there. Many, many tzaddikim are buried there. That's the big cemetery when you first come up the hill to Yerushalayim. So Rav Simcha was buried there. Rav Shlomo Lawrence said to his family, we have a plot in Har HaZeisim, which is on the other side of Yerushalayim. But I want to buy now a plot, and what, after 120 years, I want to be buried right next to Rav Simcha Wasserman. So the family said, what do you mean? We have a family plot on Har HaZeisim. Why would you want to now move and be in Har HaMenuchos next to Rav Simcha? Listen to what he said. He said, who goes to visit the kever of someone? Children and grandchildren. Rav Simcha had no children and no grandchildren. Who's ever going to go visit his kever? Who's going to daven by his kever? But I, who have children and grandchildren, after 120 years, and my family all know that I loved Rav Simcha, we were chavrusas, when they come daven by me, so they'll daven by him as well. And nothing anybody in the family could say to Rav Shlomo Lawrence would make him change his mind. And he bought a kever right next to Rav Simcha Wasserman. Now, you would not believe this. 17 years later, he died. You know what day he died? You wouldn't believe it. Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan. On Rosh Chodesh, nobody goes to the kever, because it's Rosh Chodesh. So when does Rav Shlomo Lawrence's family go to their father's kever? Beis Cheshvan, the yurt site of Rav Simcha Wasserman. And everybody, of course, they're all davening by Rav Simcha Wasserman, right? Because that was their father and grandfather and great-grandfather's chavrusa. And they come on the yard site of Rav Simcha Wasserman. Now listen to this. Rav Moshe Chodesh told me this. As both Rav Simcha and Rebbetzin Feige were getting older, Rebbetzin Feige Wasserman said to Rav Moshe Chodesh, I hope that we both live till Mashiach. But if one of us has to die first, before Mashiach, she said, I hope it's me, Rebbetzin Feige said, because I cannot live one day without my Rav Simcha. And then a few months later, when she saw Rav Chodesh, she said, I want you to know I've changed my mind. I hope that we both live till Mashiach, but if one of us has to die first, I hope it's Rav Simcha. Because I'm the only one who could sit shiva for him. I'm the only one who could give him his kaveid achrayim. Rav Simcha was nifter. Beis Cheshvan, the Rebbetzin sat shiva, and 3 days later she died. This past summer I was in Eretz Yisrael, I took my children to see it. Right here is Rav Simcha, right on his left side is the Rebbetzin, and right to the back, just a little bit up, is Rav Shlomo Lawrence. That's chesed. That's not thinking about yourself. That's the essence of chesed. Rav Shlomo Lawrence wasn't thinking about himself. He's thinking, who's going to be able to come visit Rav Simcha Wasserman? Rebbetzin Feige wasn't thinking about herself. In the beginning she thought, how could I live one day without my husband? But I'm the only one who could give him that covet, the only one in the whole world. So if we have to die, let him go first, so I'll be able to give him the covet of sitting shiva for him. And then she passed away. Absolutely incredible. So I want to share with you one more episode of chesed that's a little bit painful for me to talk about, because it has to do with me personally, but it will show you something that you'll never forget. Those of you who know me personally know that when I was 21 years old, my father passed away. I'm the oldest of 7 children. I was learning in Torah V'das, and my father knew what was happening to him. He unfortunately had Yenah Machla. As I mentioned before, he was a Mayel. And I had always walked with him to Shabbos Brisin, but now, in the final months of his illness, I went with him every single day, because he knew and I knew that I would have to leave the yeshiva and take over the parnasa of the family. And that's what happened. On Shemini Atzeres in 1966, he passed away. From June already in 66, he couldn't do brisin anymore. That's when I started. And believe me, it was very, very difficult. There are very few parents and grandparents who want to see a 21-year-old male come into their home. Many times I would walk into the house and the grandmother would take one look at me and say, "Ooh, you look so young." So I would say, "Well, the baby's also young." Okay. So, you know, kind of try to break the ice. But it was not an easy situation, that's for sure. If anybody has a tissue, I'm sorry, I should have brought up here. Okay. But anyway, so what happened was that one day in our shul, in Rav Teitelbaum's shul, thank you so much, I'm sorry to bother you. Thank you so much. Thank you. One day in our shul, we had a man by the name of Mr. Chaim Israel. And Mr. Chaim Israel comes over to me and he says, "Here, I have something for you." I said, "What is this?" And I open up the envelope, it's 1967, and it's $1,500. Now, $1,500 is a lot of money, and 67 truly was a lot of money. I said, "Listen, we're not poor. You know, I can't take this money." He said, "No, this is not stalka." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "This is a loan." So I said, "When do I have to pay you back?" He said, "I will never ask you for it. Whatever you want, you pay me back." I said, "Listen, I cannot accept this money without asking my mother. I wasn't married at the time. I was living at home. I go home, I say to my mother, 'Mom, Mr. Israel gave us $1,500. She said, "What do you mean? We're not poor. We don't need stalka." I said, "Ma, that's what I said. But he said it's a loan." So she said, "When do we pay it back?" "Whenever we want." "Okay, fine." 2 years later, I was already 23. More and more people were using me. I put together the money and I go to his office on Queens Boulevard and I say, "Mr. Israel, here I have something for you. It's the $1,500 you were kind enough to give us." He said, "No, I'm not taking it." I said, "What do you mean you're not taking it? Remember I told you I didn't want to take it? I didn't want stalker? You said it was a loan?" He says, "It is a loan. Sit down, I want to talk to you." So he says, "Do you remember when I went bankrupt?" That's what he tells me. Now I remember in shul, it was shocking, because he was a man who was quite wealthy, and all of a sudden everybody in the shul found out that he was bankrupt. He said, "There was another man in our neighborhood, his name was Mr. Lewinstein. And Mr. Lewinstein came and gave me money, and I said to him what you said to me, 'I'm not poor, I don't need stalka.' He said, 'No, it's a loan.' So I said to him, 'What do you mean a loan? When do I pay it back?' He said, 'I'll never ask you. Whenever you want, you'll pay me back.' And a few years later, I went to pay him back, and he didn't want to take the money. So I said to him, 'What you said to me? What do you mean you're not taking the money? You said it's a loan.' He said, 'It is a loan. And you have to pay, but you don't pay me. Someday you'll find a family that needs the money, and you give it to them. And when they come to pay you back, you'll tell them you're not taking the money, but they should pass it on to another family.' And that's exactly what my mother and I did. And that's what chesed is all about. When a person, again, is not thinking about himself, but he's thinking, 'How can I benefit someone else?' That's what chesed is all about. All these different stories, whether it's a little boy in Camp Romamu, or it's a great tzaddik like Rav Shlomo Lawrence or Rav Simcha Wasserman, or just regular people like you and I, doing something, not for themselves, but doing for others. Now I think there's a great lesson that we have to learn about Rabbi Akiva. There's so much to learn about Rabbi Akiva's life. But I'd like you to put yourself in his position for a moment. The Gemara tells us in Yevamos Samach Beis Amud Beis, one of the saddest Gemaras in Shas, Rabbi Akiva had 12,000 pairs of Talmidim, 24,000. And they all died. And they all died at one time within a period of 33 days. Why? Shalai Nogu covered Zeb Zeb, because they didn't give covered one to the other. So I ask you, first of all, is that a reason to die? Everything that Hashem does is midah keneged midah, measure for measure. What? Okay, so they didn't give kavod. Is that a reason to die? So the Maral says something fabulous, and we have to remember this. The Maral says, "Kasha noyig adam kavod lachaveiroi." When a person gives kavod to his friend, davar zehu etzem achayim, that's the essence of life. You validate somebody when you give them kavod. You make them feel alive, you make them feel special. Imagine somebody walked in here tonight and not one person said good evening to you. Not one person acknowledged your presence. A person would think, what do I need life? Nobody cares about me. So they didn't give kavod, they didn't give life. Unfortunately, they lost life. But you know, Chazal say that they lost their lives within a period of 33 days. So I did the math. Imagine you're Rabbi Akiva, and 24,000 Talmidim are dying within a period of 33 days. That's 737 a day. Imagine you're the Rebbe, and the Talmidim are dying, and people are calling, Rebbe, come to Haifa. This young man who just had a child, it's your Talmud, he just died, give a hesped. So Rabbi Akiva comes, and he's crying, and he's giving a hesped, and as soon as he finishes, he say, Rebbe, you got to come to Tel Aviv. Here's that big Eloi, the guy who knew all Shas. He died, you got to give a hesped. So Rabbi Akiva is running from Haifa, he comes to Tel Aviv, and then after he finishes in Tel Aviv, he says, Rebbe, you got to go down to Ashdod, that Chosin. Remember that Chosin, that young guy, the Ben Yochid? He died, you got to give a hesped. Could you imagine? Every day, Rabbi Akiva's non-stop. He can't even give 700 hesbedim a day. What would we say if we were Rabbi Akiva? Okay, God, I'm out of here. Obviously, you don't like the way I'm teaching. Obviously, you don't think my Torah is worth anything. I'm out of here. Get somebody else. Right? That's what anybody would say. What does Rabbi Akiva do? It's unbelievable. The Gemara tells us, and it's in Bereishis Rabbah, Samach Aleph Gimel, Rabbi Akiva gathers 5 Talmidim and he says, guys, we were doing the right thing. We're learning Torah, we're teaching Torah. Except the Talmidim made a mistake. Tenu datchem, pay attention. Shaloi tasu kimaseyem. Let's not make the same mistake they made. But we're not giving up. Rabbi Akiva never gives up. Omdu umolu kol Eretz Yisrael Torah. They filled the whole Eretz Yisrael. These 5 taught others, who taught others, and they brought back Torah to its highest level. You know what that means? You never give up. That's the lesson of Rabbi Akiva. Every one of us goes through challenges. There's not one person in this Beis Medrash tonight who hasn't gone through challenges. But you don't give up. Never. Never give up. And you know something? To me it was fascinating. Because many of you may be familiar with the last daf in Makkos. The last daf in Makkos tells us, Rabbi Akiva was walking with his friends, and they were walking outside the Beis HaMikdash after it had been destroyed, and there was a fox that was crawling around in the Kodesh Kodeshim. And the other Talmid Chacham, they started crying. And Rabbi Akiva's laughing. So he says to them, why are you guys crying? So they said, crying. The Torah tells us that Azor Hakorev Yumas, that if a person of a Yid who is not a Kayan comes into Kodesh Kodashim, it's so holy, he would die. And now a fox is running around. It's not to cry about. They said, what are you laughing about? He said, you know why I'm laughing? Because the Navi predicted this. And the Navi predicted that this is going to come true, and it came true. The Navi predicted we're going to get out of here, and there's going to be a Geula. So if this happened true, that's also going to happen. So look at Rabbi Akiva. He goes through devastation, and he's not broken, and that's the lesson we have to learn. And he sees a fox in the Beis HaMikdash, and he's laughing, because if that came true, the good things is also going to come true. So now I'm going to make you all laugh. I'm going to make you laugh. You'll see something amazing. How you should never give up. Recently, there was a fundraising seminar. And all the big guns from all the big Torah organizations, Eisha Torah, Nar Sameach, and Chai Lifeline, they all the fundraisers, they got together and they shared their war stories. You know, rabbis also have war stories, right? Everybody, graphic designers, Moelim, everybody's got stories, right, in their own profession. Advertisers, you know, party planners, we all got stuff, right? Yesterday I was at a Shabbaton, Nebach for Links. It's a wonderful organization of Yesemais, kids that lost a parent during their teenage years. But they had a bus driver, a frum guy, who drove them up. So by Shalashudas, this bus driver was telling like war stories. Amazing. And there were two bus drivers, they were sharing stories. Everybody's got stories. So now here, these fundraisers, one guy gets up and he says, Rabbi, I want to show you what fundraising is all about. Here, try to remember this. SW3rd power/N. SW3rd power/N. Nobody can believe this guy. What is he talking about? What has this got to do with fundraising? And after I heard what he had to say, I say it's not only fundraising, that's what life is all about. You know what SW3rd power/N means to the fundraiser? Some will, some won't. So what? Next. Isn't that amazing? Some will give you, some won't. So what? Next. I recently had to speak for 120 divorced people. Men and women, not from each other, they wouldn't be in the same room. But I'm talking about, you know, they got together. And I said, hey, listen, some marriages will work out, some won't work out. So what? Next. Right? That's Rabbi Akiva. That's Rabbi Akiva. I had to meet him, it didn't work out. Okay, sorry. But let's go move on. Next. He gets 5 Talmidim and he starts all over again. And this is not a bad thing to hang up on your refrigerator. Because this will make you get through the tough times. You're looking for a job. Some will give you the interview. Some won't give you the interview. So what? Next. You want the Gabbai to give you an aliyah this Shabbos? Some Gabbai will give you the aliyah. Some won't. Next. Get a new Gabbai. But the idea is, you don't get broken. That's what it's all about. It's Rabbi Akiva in the Sphira, who lost 737 Talmidim a day. And what does he do? He doesn't throw in the towel. He goes out there and he gets 5 more Talmidim, and they fill the entire Eretz Yisrael with Torah. That's what it's all about. I want to share with you a Gemara. I was always fascinated by this Gemara. And I think it's so appropriate in the Yemei HaSfira to talk about it, because we spoke before about Arichas Yomim, the length of days, not necessarily the length of years. Take a look in the Gemara Megillah Chav Zayin Amud Beis. They asked 28 different Amoraim the same question. Bama Harachta Yomim. How did you live so long? Many of these people, the Gemara doesn't say how long each of them lived, but obviously they must have lived a long life. And people ask them, how did you live so long? So listen to some of the answers. Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua said, you know what? Miyomai loy osisi kapandria lebeis haknesses. I never made the Beis HaKnesses a shortcut. In other words, what does that mean? That sometimes you have to go from this side of the street to the other side. But instead of walking all the way around, so you cut through the shul, you're not allowed to do that. The truth is that if you have to go through the shul to get your coat or whatever, and you're on the outside or the other side, you have to say a pasuk. You have to sit down and say a pasuk. You cannot make a shul a shortcut. He said, I never did that. Miyomai, I never did that. They asked Rav Preda, how did you live long? He said, Miyomai, all my days, Loi kidmani, Odom, Lebeis HaMedrash, no one came to shul before I did. I was there first, every single day. Okay? Now, then they asked Rav Zeira, how did you live long? He said, you know something? Miyomai, all my days, loy hikpadati b'seich beis. I never got angry in my house. What a wonderful husband, right? He never got angry. Okay? And then it goes on and on and on. So I always wondered, what, there are 28 different reasons. What in the world are you supposed to do if you want to live long? Who are you supposed to follow? There are 28 different people here. So I remember one time I happened to be in the Tells Yeshiva in Cleveland I was visiting, and I saw Rabbi Cheskel Monk, one of the Rosh Yeshivas, and we spoke about this Gemara. And he told me in a tziv that you have to look up. It is so beautiful, and it's so on target. The tziv is in the Parsha of Tzitzis, of all places, in Parsha Shalach, in the Hamikdavar. If you want to look it up, you can see Bamidbar Tezvav, Pasek Mem Aleph, and he says like this. What did these people see? What did these people do? What was it that made them live long? And he says like this. He says, Ein avodas Hashem b'tmidus shel kol b'nei adam shavim. Each one of us serves Hashem in a different way. Some are exceptional in tefillah. Some are exceptional in Torah. Some are exceptional in Gemilas Chasodim. And take a look over here. Each person did something else. But there was one common denominator. And here's the genius answer. Miyomai. They said always. There was a consistency. Once they undertook something, they never stopped. That's the way to have great days. That's the way to have Arichas Yomim according to the Gemara. And listen to what Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid writes in Sefer Chassidim, number 210, Simen Reish Yud. If you see, he says, a Talmud Chacham that's living long, you should know that the reason that he's living long is because he undertook something and it didn't even have to be from the Torah. Not making a shortcut in a shul, doesn't say in the Torah. Not getting angry in your house, doesn't say in the Torah. Any coming shul after the first one, doesn't say in the Torah. But they all, every one of them, they did something and they never stopped. That's the answer. Whatever you undertake tonight from this wonderful brochure of ACT, you're going to start doing something today, never stop. I'll give you small ideas. From now on, you're going to be among the first 10 that come to shul. Every single day. Doesn't say in the Torah you have to be from the first 10, but you do it every day. That's what the Gemara is saying. Miyomai. Consistency. Call a lonely person. We all know people that are lonely. Make one call a day. Every day. Just one person. Call an aunt. Call an uncle. Call a friend. Call somebody who can't get out. Somebody's in a wheelchair. Somebody's in a hospital. Somebody's in a nursing home. We all know these people. We just don't think about them because we're so busy. It's nobody's fault. That's the life we lead. But stop for a minute. Think about it. Call a woman who can't get a get. Call an aguna and tell her you're thinking about her. You're davening for her. I can tell you, there's so many of those women out there. Tell them that you care about them. You might not be able to do something about it, but you're thinking about her. You're going to daven for her. There's so many people that you could call. You don't have to call 10 people a day. Every day, just think about somebody else besides yourself. Miyomai, that's what they said. And of course, if you do a chesed a day, or if a woman decides from now on she's going to daven mincha every day, of course, a woman is not mechuyav to daven mincha every day. But if she decides every day, that's the consistency. That's what Hashem is looking for. Consistency, miyomai, that's what it's all about. I want to share with you a beautiful story. In the early 1900s, there was a great Talmud Chacham who came to America to raise money for a commentary he was writing on the Yerushalmi. It's called the Ritvaz. And his name was Rabbi Yaakov David Wolofsky. And one of the reasons that he came to America was not only to raise money, but to give chizuk to a man who was having a very tough time at that time. His name was Rabbeinu Yaakov Yosef. It's not for now. He was the Rav HaKollel. He was the Rav of all the shuls in Manhattan and in New York. And he was having a tough time, and Rav Yaakov David Wolofsky came to give him chizuk. But then he gave a drasha in the Pike Street Shul. The Pike Street Shul, unfortunately, today is a Chinese, I don't know, whatever you call their places of prayer. But at that time, it was the primary shul on the Lower East Side. I remember even Rav Aaron Cutler's Levaya. We were all in the Pike Street Shul, outside the Pike Street Shul. That was the primary place to be. So he gave a very interesting drasha, and he said like this. He said, you know, in years gone by, there were generations of people that were called mitzvah yidden. What does it mean, mitzvah yidden? That they were not talmid chachamim, but these particular Jews in this particular city, they loved Shabbos. And they observed Shabbos as much as they could, and they gave over the love of Shabbos to the next generation. There were generations, he said, that loved kashrus, and they were so medactic in kashrus, and they were so careful, and they gave over that love of the mitzvah of kashrus to the next generation. There were some generations where they loved tefillah, and they gave over to the next generation, their children, always to daven with a minyan, and to daven every word from a siddur. He said, but when the winds of secularism came, and the winds of immorality came, then all of a sudden, these mitzvahs were not able to be given over to the next generation. The only way that they could save the next generation was those who learned Torah and taught Torah. And then he brought a pasuk that we all know, but listen how he touched it. He said, "Chiner mitzvah." A mitzvah is only a candle. Torah is or. Torah is light. He said, imagine if you have a candle that's burning right here, all the windows are closed, so the candle will burn until the wick goes out. But as soon as you open up a window and the wind comes, it's going to go out. But what if you have a big fire, like the Los Angeles fires, in the acres of land? What happens when a wind comes? Just the opposite. The wind carries the fire and makes it even stronger. And that's what he says. If people are only doing mitzvahs, it's wonderful. But if you have the winds of secularism and the winds of immorality and the winds of materialism, what's going to happen? It's going to blow away the mitzvah. They're not going to be able to give it over to the next generation. The only way is through Torah. The only way is through Torah. Because Torah gives us the strength that when there's a wind coming against us, it makes us want to learn more. And that's why ACT stands for learning Torah. Because it's only through Torah that we're going to be able to understand what the right midos are. It's only through Torah that we're going to be able to give over the strength to the next generation. And as we prepare for Kabbalah HaTorah, we have to remember it's not only the mitzvahs. Every mitzvah is important. But without Limud HaTorah, it's not going to go to the next generation. They won't have that fortification. The outside winds are too strong. And finally, we'll say one more thing and then review and end with a great story. There is a Gemara that is so colorful and so beautiful. You could just picture this. The Gemara is in Saita. And the Gemara tells us, Saita mem beis amud beis. And it's interesting because Saita is one of the Gemaras that people learn during Sfira because it has 49 daf, and so they learn one daf every day and then they get to the finish of Masechta. The Gemara in Saita tells us like this. Picture the battlefield. David is fighting, about to fight against the giant Goliath. How in the world can David beat Goliath? Goliath is a mighty giant. David is a tzaddik, but he's short compared to this Goliath. And a baskal comes out. A voice from heaven. Listen to this baskal. Yavoyu b'nei hanashuka. The child of the one who kissed should fall in the hands of the one who attached. What does that voice mean? The child of the one who kissed should fall in the hands of the one who kissed, who attached rather. We all know that Naomi had two daughters-in-law, Ruth and Orpah. And we all know the story that Naomi fell on difficult times and she told her daughters-in-law, go away from me, I'm a cursed woman. And what happened? Orpah kissed her and said goodbye. But Ruth attached herself to Naomi. Goliath came from Orpah. David came from Ruth. So the Baskal said, the one who was the son of the one who kissed, Goliath, his ancestor, was Orpah. She only kissed Naomi. And she left her. That person should fall into the one to David. Because David's ancestor, Ruth, attached herself. And I think there's a deep lesson here. There are people that service the Torah, lip service. They just kiss it. And then they walk off and do whatever they want. But there are those people, that's what we were saying before, Va'atem ha'dveikim. That's what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was asking his Talmidim. Which is the meter that we should be dovek, we should attach ourselves. Every one of us, between now and Shavuos, has to undertake a mitzvah that you will become attached to for the rest of your life. There are some people that are attached to the mitzvah of Achnasas Archim. No matter who's going to come to Highland Park or to Edison or whatever, if they need a place for Shabbos, you know you can rely on that family. There are people like that. That's called Zveikus in a mitzvah. It's not lip service. It's not B'nai HaNeshuka. It's B'nai HaDevuka. There are some people that are so involved in Shidduchim, reading as many Shidduchim as they can to people who are divorced, people who are single, people who are mother, whatever. But they're so attached to that mitzvah. It's a beautiful thing. Not everybody can be attached to everything, as we said before from the Netziv. Everybody has different ways. But we've got to undertake something tonight. Tonight, between now and Shavuos, let's undertake something that we will become Dovak in that mitzvah. Some of these guys, Toim Ches Shabbos is their whole life. It's beautiful. Some people, Hatzolah is their whole life. It's beautiful. It makes no difference. It doesn't even have to be a Daraisa, as we said. Miyomai. Let's undertake it tonight. Think about it. Discuss it at home. What mitzvah can our family become known for from now on that we're all going to be involved with? Again, you can't do everything, but you can certainly do something. So let's review, and we'll end with a fabulous story. Let's remember when the Sfas Emes died, the Imre Emes said that his father had Arichas Yomim. Nobody can guarantee Arichas Shonim, length of years, but we can each in our own lives have Arichas Yomim. How are we going to have Arichas Yomim? Making sure that we understand what the Sfira is all about. The Sfira is 49 days. Why Leiv Toiv? It steps up. We don't say Shechiyano now. We say Shechiyano at the end of Shavuos, at the end by Shavuos, because we're trying to get up higher and higher. How? To get that Leiv Toiv. Because when we had that Karpas at the beginning of the Seder, that showed that was the Ksenis Pas and brothers couldn't get along. Let's work until Kabbalah Satira, where we are as one. Let's remember those little boys from Camp Rome, where they were as one. They wrote down that boy's raffle ticket. Let's remember Rav Simcha Wasserman and Rav Shlomo Lawrence and Rebbe Tzimfega Wasserman. Let's remember Mr. Chaim Israel, how he gave me the money that he got from Mr. Lewinstein, and a one passed it on to everybody else. Let's become like Rabbi Akiva. No matter what happens in life, we're not going to let ourselves be destroyed. Rabbi Akiva lost 737 Talmidim a day. What did he do? He took 5 Talmidim and he made sure that Torah was reinstated in all of Klal Yisrael. Let's remember, SW to the third power / N. Some will, some won't, so what? Right? Here it is, one more time. Put it on your refrigerator. Take a picture, put it in the bulletin, right? And put it out. The rabbi's drasha. Some will listen, some won't, so what? Next week you'll listen. Okay? Don't be destroyed. Let's remember, Miyomai. Doesn't make a difference what you do, but you got to do the same thing every day. And once you have the consistency, that's how we can be zeicha, hopefully, tarichas yomim. And let's remember, it's not only the mitzvahs, kiner mitzvah, but Torah or. It's Torah, it's limud ha-Torah, every one of us, every man, woman, and child, according to what they have to learn. You should listen to a shir, go to a shir, and study. Not one day should go by without chesed and without Torah, as the Chofetz Chaim tells us. Keep that notebook of chesed, and you'll see, you'll become a different person. I just want to end with this great story. I love to travel. I love to go many places throughout the world. And one of the best places that I've ever gone to, and I've been there numerous times, is South Africa. Besides the accent, they have the greatest accent in the world, but besides everything else. I remember the first time that I was going to South Africa, I met Rabbi Wein, and he said, "You're going to Gan Eden." And the truth is, if you've ever been to Cape Town, and you see the Cape Point where the Atlantic Ocean meets the Indian Ocean, and the water and the mountains, the bracha just flows by itself. There's nothing as beautiful as that. So, in South Africa, they have a wonderful young chief rabbi. Some of you may have heard of him already this year. His name is Rabbi Warren, Rabbi Zev Goldstein. We happen to be very good friends. I happened to be in South Africa the year he first became a Rav, the chief rabbi. And this past summer he calls me up and he says, "You know, we have something in South Africa, I'd like you to join us. And it's called Sinai Indaba. And Daba is a great Zulu word or Afrikaans word, which means conference for important things. He says, we're going to have all the Jews in South Africa, we're going to bring them together. And we want to have speakers from all over the world. And in Johannesburg, we're going to have 4,000 Jews in one hotel. I want you to be from the four speakers that are going to speak Saturday night. Sunday, all the speakers, all the eight speakers are going to give various sessions. And then at night again, the other four speakers will speak. And that's going to be to influence people. And he's trying to get everybody to keep one Shabbos together. And that's exactly what they did. But then he calls me up a few days before I'm about to go to South Africa. He says, Rabbi Cohen, I just need one more favor from you. I said, what's that? He says, you know, Rabbi Wine and I, he says about himself, we just wrote a book. And we wrote a book about Lithuanian Jewry. And we want to sell the book. So at the 4 o'clock session, would you mind just interview us? You'll sit on one side, you've read the book, and you'll ask us questions, and we'll answer the questions, and outside the book, so be there, we'll sign them, we'll sell them, it'll be wonderful. Would you mind just making one session, just an interview of both of us? I said, no, of course not, I'd be very happy to do that. Fine. I come to South Africa, and I'm on a Jewish radio station, it's a few days before the event. And just when I finish, here comes Rabbi Wein. He's on next on the station. So I say, oh, Rabbi Wein, Shalom Aleichem. You know, I have to interview you 4 o'clock on Sunday about the book. Are there any questions you want me to ask you? He says, whatever you want. You know, he's the coolest guy around. You know, whatever you want. I said, Rabbi Wein, don't you want to know in advance? Nah, don't worry. Whatever you ask me, it's going to be fine. Now, Rabbi Wein is the coolest guy. I'll never forget the first time that I spoke with him on a program. I was so frightened. I said, I have to be the first speaker because how could you follow him? You know, he knows everything, right? So I remember I prepared 3 months for that speech. It was called Preparing for Geula. It was in Montauk High School, 900 women standing room only in Borough Park. And I covered the topic from beginning to end. He gets up. He says one sentence. He had the whole oilam in his back pocket, and he continued. This is the first sentence he said. After my whole speech, when I'm telling you, I covered the topic from head to toe, 55 minutes of thunder. He says, I learned a lesson in the rabbinate a long time ago. When the mile gets finished, there's very little left for the rabbi to do. Fine. Okay. Sinai and Davos starts, Motzei Shabbos, tremendous crowd. It's amazing. Sunday, it's amazing. Everybody in America has to learn from the South Africans. Every session began exactly on top of the hour. 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, till 2, lunch. Unbelievable. Exact. You know how to do it? Amazing. 9 o'clock, the first session starts, right? 9:30, a guy sitting right here holds up a big sign. 10 minutes left. 9:35, another guy sitting right next to him. 5 minutes left. 9:40, the earth opens up, the speaker falls in. That's it. Finished. It was amazing. So 4 o'clock, I get up, and I'm sitting here, Rabbi Wein and Rabbi Goldstein are sitting there, and we go through the interview. I see the sign, 10 minutes left. I see the sign, 5 minutes left. Uh-oh. I got only 5 minutes. I say to Rabbi Wein, Rabbi Wein, do you mind, I would like to ask you a question that's been bothering me for 40 years. He looks up at me and says, what? 40 years? I said, yeah, 40 years. He said, what is it? I said, Rabbi Wein, do you remember 40 years ago, you were a Rav in Miami, you had a very big shul, and it was Chol HaMoed Pesach, and you called me. I had just become a Moel, and you needed a Moel that was ready to come to Miami for the last 2 days, Yontif, to do a bris in your community. And I came, and it was wonderful. I spent Yontif together with you and your family. And then Matzah Yontif, with Davening Ma'ariv, your big shul, and I looked around the whole shul, the place was packed. And I noticed, Rabbi Wein, you're the only man in Miami without a suntan. Now, I couldn't say he's all white because I was in South Africa, right? So I didn't say that. But I said, Rabbi Wein, you never stop. You never go out. You're always writing, doing, learning, teaching, videos, CDs, MP3, everything. Books, newsletters. You produce yourself in 40 years more than companies have produced. Don't you ever get tired? How do you do it? He got very serious. He said, I want to tell you a story that happened to me when I was 11 years old. 1946. He said, I grew up in Chicago. And one day my father says to me, we're going to the airport. I said, why are we going to the airport? He said, because a big tzaddik is coming to Chicago. He's going to address all the rabbanim and all the yeshiva brachim in Chicago. I said, who's the Rav? He said, Rav Isaac Halevi Herzog, the Rav of Eretz Yisrael. He's going to come and he's going to speak to all of us. So in those days you could get up almost to the plane. We all went to the airport, a whole cavalcade of cars. The rabbanim came, they greeted him, and they brought him to this big shul. The rabbanim sat up front. The bachrim, he said, were 200 in those days. Today there would be thousands. He said there were the 200 boys from the elementary school and the high school and Beis Medrash of Skokie. And Rav Isaac Halevi Herzog gave a shiur. And after he gave a shiur, he said, now I want to talk to everyone, especially to the bachrim. And he said like this, I just got back from Rome. And in Rome, I went to visit the Pope. It was Pope Paul, Yimach Shemai. And I said to the Pope, I've got a list of 10,000 Jewish boys and girls. Give me back these children. These are our children. Give me back these children. And the Pope said, I can't give you back even one. And I said, why not? You know that your people stole many of these children. And many of these children, we gave them to you because we didn't think we were going to survive the war. Give me back these children. These are our children. And the Pope said, I can't give you back one. And I said, why? I begged him. And he said, because we have a rule that if any child has been baptized, we cannot give him back to any other religion. And all these 10,000 were baptized. And Rav Isaac Halevi Herzog said, I begged him. I pleaded with him. And he wouldn't listen. And Rabbi Wein said, suddenly, Rabbi Herzog started crying. He put his head down on the podium and he started crying. The place was silent, just listening to this tzaddik cry. He wept. And finally, when he picked up his face, Rabbi Wein said his face was red like a lion. And he looked out and he said, I can't do anything for these 10,000 kids. But what are you going to do for the children of Klal Yisrael? Are you going to remember what I said? It's up to you, especially the young Bachrim. What are you going to do to save the future children of Klal Yisrael? I can't do anything anymore for these 10,000. What are you going to do for them? Don't ever forget what I said. And then he stopped. And then everybody went up to shake his hand. And Rabbi Wein said, I don't know. I don't know why. But when he shook my hand, he looked me straight in the face and he said, are you going to remember what I said? Are you going to forget what I said? Remember, what are you going to do for the children of Klal Yisrael? He said, every time I get tired, every time I want to put down my pen, every time I want to put down my head, I'm haunted by those words. What are you going to do for the children of Klal Yisrael? And that's what we have to ask ourselves before Kabbalah Satira. What are we going to do for the children of Klal Yisrael? It's not enough that the kids in Highland Park or in Edison are from. That's great. But 35 miles from here, they're kids, they don't even know what a Gemara is. They don't know what Shema is. They don't know what a Siddur is. Kiruv is not only for Eishat Torah and Or Sameach. Kiruv is for every single one of us. There are thousands and thousands of Jews out there who have no appreciation of Yiddishkeit. What are we going to do for the children of Klal Yisrael? Act is one thing that we can do. We can act, making sure that they get to learn Torah, that we invite them to the shul, we invite them to the community, we make events for them, and show them the beauty and the godliness of Torah. That's what Sfira is all about. Growing every day higher and higher and higher. David should help that all of us should learn the mitzvah of Kiner, mitzvah of a Torah Or, and we should act not only in this community, but every community that we possibly can, to be Zeicha, to Kabbalah Satira, to say Shachiyanu, Vikimanu, Vigiyanu, Lazman Azeh. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for listening.